It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. The Democrats accomplished an historic first, winning back the U.S. House of Representatives from the Republicans while losing seats in the U.S. Senate. So, was there a blue wave or not? And with the Democrats back in control of the House, what does that mean for President Trump's agenda? How'd the results of congressional races surprise you, if at all, and why? Do you think national policies will change now? How will that happen? Did you vote Republican in 2016, but independent, libertarian, or Democrat Democratic in this election? Why? 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org is the email address. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Lily Gorin joins us. She's a professor of political science and global studies at Carroll University in Waukesha. Good morning, Lily. Always a pleasure to talk with you.
It's nice to be on with you today, John.
So let's go over the results. Democrats won the House. Republicans expanded their majority in the Senate. Break down those numbers for us.
Well, we're still counting votes in a lot of places, but it's looking like the Republican pickup of at least 3 to 4 seats in the Senate, with the Democrats losing those seats, but picking up one seat in the race in New Mexico, I believe. And then in the House, it looks to be around at least 30 seats that the Democrats picked up. I believe they needed 23 to take the majority. But again, there's still some races where there's ballots being counted.
And the Democrats were in kind of a tough spot because they had to defend a number of Senate seats that were in states that were pretty red that President Trump had taken in 2016. So it was always going to be a little iffy whether they could make any advances in the Senate or even hang on to what they had. What does that suggest to us about what may be coming in the next election 2 years from now, and how the Senate seats will play out then? Who has to defend what?
Well, there's a lot of strategists on both sides who, sort of talked about the Senate map for Democrats in 2018 being one of the most difficult to defend in the sort of history of direct election of senators. And so they did lose seats in places like Missouri. Claire McCaskill lost her two terms there. Joe Donnelly lost in Indiana. But you did see people like Joe Manchin, a fairly conservative Democrat, hold on to a seat in West Virginia, which is really, I think, what the most Trump state in the 2016 election. So you do see sort of some of the sort of de-aligning of Democrats in fairly Trump-liking or Trump-enthusiastic states, Republican states. And so that's the 2018 map. The 2020 map is one that strategists on both sides, again, are suggesting will be similarly difficult for some Republicans to defend a number of their Senate seats when that election rolls around.
All right. Well, what about state governorships and legislatures?
Well, we saw a number of, governors' offices change hands, it seems, also in the state of Wisconsin, which I'm sure we'll be talking about. But you saw a number of governors, 3 moderate Republicans who held on to their offices, but a number of Republican losing bids in places like Kansas, but winning bids in places like Florida. And I believe the Georgia election has still not been called.
Yeah, what can these results tell us about how people across the country are feeling and what it is they want in the coming years?
I would probably be not a very good political scientist if I had a direct, clear answer to that right now, because I think it's a somewhat of a muddled message. In a lot of ways, there is a sort of request or an admonition that members of the House and the Senate possibly, pay attention to what is going on in the Trump administration, possibly holding the Trump administration accountable. But there's also a reflection on, Trump's campaigning in the last couple of weeks and places where Trump enthusiastic voters and also candidates won, like people like DeSantis in Florida. So it's not a totally clear message, I think.
Well, it rarely is totally clear, and I'm not blaming you at all for hedging on it, because this was kind of a muddle, as you say. What was the biggest surprise to you in these midterms?
I mean, I think part of what was interesting that I've been looking at, and, you know, I talked to my students about, is the voter turnout. And we don't have full numbers on voter turnout, but the early voting numbers just in and of themselves were up rather significantly in a lot of places like Texas. You saw that very contested Senate seat between Beto O'Rourke and Ted Cruz, and Beto O'Rourke coming within, I think, 3 or 4 percentage points of Ted Cruz, and of course, raising an astronomical amount of money in that race. And so, part of what you sort of are seeing are unexpected candidates like O'Rourke having, you know, very good nights, not necessarily winning, but having kind of an interesting night politically. And then you have people like Tammy Baldwin, who won her Senate seat with close to, I think, 10%, and Amy Klobuchar, just in our neighbor's state, who won her Senate seat with like 22%. And so, you know, in states that, in Wisconsin, that voted for Trump in 2016, and in Minnesota, that, you know, was just 3 or 4 percentage points not in Trump's column in 2016. So some of these sort of wins are interesting in looking at, you know, what else is going on in other states where, you know, Claire McCaskill, as I said, lost her seat, and the Senate race, Nelson lost his seat in Florida to a Republican. And so you have, you know, some different things going on in different parts of the country.
Well, later on this morning, we will be talking about the record numbers of women who ran, and many
Absolutely.
Of whom won, and we will be spending quite a bit of time talking about that a bit later on. How has President Donald Trump responded to the election results? Does he think he won, lost? What was his thinking here?
He said that he won, that everyone won. He called a lot of the Republicans who he had been stumping for, who won their elections last night, but he also called Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and Mitch McConnell. And so, you know, Trump saying that the Republicans holding on to the Senate and, in fact, expanding their numbers in the Senate is a big win for him. And again, the Senate does a lot of work with the president in terms of confirming judges and confirming his appointments to cabinet positions. There's anticipation of some cabinet shakeups. And so the Senate being in firm Republican control is an asset with regard to that. But having a House that is, you know, in the majority to the other party may be problematic in moving any agenda items forward.
Well, and the candidates who won, who really supported Trump, are going to be even more in his column now, because they may feel they owe him their political career. Do you think that's true?
Yeah, I mean, I think what you'll see in both the House and the Senate, but particularly probably more so in the House, is that the Republicans who won in the House, who kept their seats, tend to be more aligned with Trump, and there are fewer moderates. There, you know, the idea of a moderate on either side of the aisle, but particularly with regard to, you know, allegiance to Trump, there are fewer of them.
Lily Gorin is a professor of political science and global studies at Carroll University in Waukesha. We're talking about the national implications of the midterm election results. You can join us with your take on this at 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Ideas at WPR.org is the email address, or tweet us at WPR Mornings. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. Stay tuned. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. Well, the midterm election ads are over. Now it's time to talk about what the election itself meant. Did the results of congressional races surprise you? Why? Do you think national policies will change now? And how will that happen? Did you maybe vote Republican in 2016, but switch your vote for this election? And why did that happen? 800-642-1234. Ideas at WPR.org. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. Lily Gorin is with us in this segment. She is a professor of political science and global studies at Carroll University in Waukesha. Let's go to the phones. Ed joins us from West Dallas. Ed, good morning.
One of the biggest trends last night, especially in this state of Wisconsin, is the effectiveness of organized labor. And if Mr. Trump thinks he's going to have his big Midwestern wall to help him in 2020, he better look at the election results last night, where we reelected Tammy Baldwin in Wisconsin, got rid of the biggest union hater and union buster in Scott Walker, elected a Democratic governor in Illinois, and elected a Democratic governor in Michigan, and reelected Sherwood Brown in Ohio, and that Ohio governor's race was fairly close.
All right, Ed, thanks. Lily Gorin, was this a victory for labor?
Well, I mean, it's probably one that will be reflected as such, in part because a lot of labor unions were out also campaigning and advocating for the election of people like Tony Evers. But again, you saw some interesting things in the Midwest, specifically where we are. You did see a number of Democrats take hold of offices that had been held by Republicans, and you sort of do have this sort of discussion of Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin as the states that had helped Trump become elected president in 2016, and you're seeing larger Democratic voices at the state level and also in the sort of federal elections coming out of those states, and so that this is a contested area likely for the 2020 election that labor unions may also be again playing a role in.
800-642-1234. Ed, thanks for your call. You could be next. What did you think about the results of congressional races last night? And do you think this will change national policies? And if so, how? Or maybe you think it won't? And why do you feel that way? 800-642-1234. Ideas at WPR.org is the email address. You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings. This wasn't exactly the blue wave Democrats were hoping for, was it? Can you tell us why?
Well, I mean, the Democrats had hoped that they would be able to take the Senate, or at least hold the Senate where it was, and, you know, possibly pick up a couple of the other governor's offices. But at the same time, the move in the House, where a number of seats are considered to be quite gerrymandered, is one where the Democrats did have a very good night, and that the number of people who voted for Democrats, and when we see the full totals, may be 6 or 7 million more than voted for Republicans overall. And so that's, part of what is considered to be a wave, perhaps, or maybe not a wave. And there's a lot of discussion about possibly not using this terminology anymore among political scientists.
Well, yeah, probably a good idea. When we think about campaign strategy, was it the Democrats weren't progressive enough in those races they didn't win, or that they were too progressive?
Well, I mean, I think, again, when you start looking at the Senate map, the Senate map was a very tough map for Democrats to hold seats. And, when I look at races like, again, specifically, I've already mentioned Claire McCaskill's race, where she'd won a election and reelection. This was her third run. And Missouri, which had, has sort of been a kind of old school Democratic state for quite some time, but is a fairly rural state. And what you're seeing in the sort of results from last night's elections and 2016's election is a real sort of continuing divide between rural America and sort of urban and suburban America. And so that is, I think, part of what was pronounced in last night's results in lots of ways.
What does a House majority mean when you don't have a majority in the Senate and you have a Republican president with veto power?
Well, you know, again, it's a question of whether pieces of legislation that are coming from the White House will make it through the House. If Trump, who has on occasion been known to be a transactional president, wanting to do deals, as he says, and whether he will do deals with, you know, a Democratic majority in the House in order to get legislation that he wants passed, you know, with the Senate in his favor. But I think part of what you'll likely see moving forward is that a lot of the Democrats who will be committee chair people, men and women, will be some investigations of various aspects of the Trump administration and other people in the Trump administration.
Yeah, we're already seeing stories about how we are going to eventually see President Trump's tax returns, for example. Has control of the House ever flipped without the winning party gaining Senate seats? And what are your thoughts on that?
I think that this is a historical first. I could be wrong, and I didn't spend the night combing through my history of the Senate and the House in this regard, but I do think that is a first, a historical first.
What is it, what does it mean?
Well, I mean, I think it, again, sort of signifies some of the polarization in the United States and that some of these fissures that I was just mentioning, when you start looking at the breakdown of the voters, too, that you saw Democratic women or women voting more Democratic. So you have some of this, you know, so-called gender gap, but you also have this sort of educational divide that people with college educations, according to all of the demographic surveys, tend now to vote Democratic, and people who do not have a college education tend to vote Republican. And so, again, you have this sort of divides around demographics, divides around gender, and you know, I'm sure that the data will also show us divides around race as well.
So is polarization an effective campaign strategy then, and could Republicans' performance in these elections make Trump even bolder?
It's very possible. And again, there was a lot of discussion before the election that if the House had not gone to the Democrats and the Senate, likely was going to go to the Republicans, that would have in fact made Trump bolder in both his rhetoric and what he pursues as his agenda. Whether or not that will be the case, given the flip in the House, we have yet to see. But he is holding a press conference, I believe, this morning, and he doesn't hold a lot of them. And so even there, you have some perhaps change in his behavior, perhaps. But I'll be interested to see what he says at his press conference.
Let's hear what Karen and Spooner has to say next. Karen, good morning. Thanks for joining us on The Morning Show.
Good morning. Thank you. I'm very concerned about the voter suppression that has happened in so many of the states, and the fact that the Democrats are able to win at all, like in Wisconsin, given the gerrymandering that's happened over, the Walker administration, is pretty remarkable. I hope that the House goes to work on resolving these issues. They did not do it after Obama was elected, and I thought that was flawed. That they did not get to work on the voter suppression. And I really think that we have to do something now. But I also think even though O'Rourke did not win, that we have an idea of what may happen in 2020.
All right. Karen, thanks for joining us this morning. Lily Gorin?
I mean, there's a lot of discussion about issues around voter suppression. This is particularly acute, it looked like, in Georgia. And, you know, the race there, it's too close to call for the governor's office. And the person running as a Republican, Mr. Kemp, is the Secretary of State. And there was a lot of discussion and a lot of lawsuits that had been filed and continue to be filed there. And so some of what you saw last night was around the issue of voter suppression. Suppression or voter access. Interestingly, in Florida, one of the ballot initiatives was to reinstate the voting rights of former felons, and that won.
Yeah, and it won, and it wasn't even close.
Right. And it had to reach over 60% of the vote, I believe. And so that has the likelihood to reinstate the voting rights for, I think, over at least a million people in Florida. And so there, you know, some of the ballot initiatives were also about having commissions drawing the congressional maps in other states. So there were a number of ballot initiatives about making sort of voter access easier. But there are also a lot of this discussion in, I think, North Carolina. And also Georgia with regard to issues around voter suppression.
Lily Gorin, we are out of time.
Thank you for having me today.
Well, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, and I appreciate you getting up and coming into our Milwaukee studios for this discussion this morning.
Happy to do so.
Lily Gorin is a professor of political science and global studies at Carroll University in Waukesha. She joined us from our studios in Milwaukee. Up next, we'll be talking about U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin's re-election victory over challenger State Senator Leah Vukmir. What do you think of that race? We want to know. Give us a call, 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. I'm John Munson. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.